The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
One time for the rundown of the news of the weekend. Where is the plan? Asked the Washington Post. Biden is pressed on a global vaccine strategy. The wear and tear of the pandemic has begun to take its toll on Team Biden. They are falling behind in a plan that does not exist and promises that have gone unfulfilled. And while they want to take credit for the 152 million vaccines that have been administered to Americans, they don't want to take the blame for a completely bollocked up rollout. They also don't want to take the blame for the Johnson & Johnson pause. Now, the Wall Street Journal yesterday published a story, J&J vaccine pause stoked hesitancy that threatens the COVID-19 vaccination drive. Of course it did. That's common sense. Everybody knows it. And I understand that people don't like to admit error. But that error is compounding the problem and destroying the credibility. Better to have just stepped up and said, we made a mistake. The J&J vaccine should not have been paused, but they won't do that. Jeff Zients, in fact, the head of the rollout, the head of the White House task force on the vaccine, went on State of the Union with Jake Tapper yesterday and said this in response to the question whether or not the J&J pause had stalled the rollout, cut 31.
No, not at all. I mean, the FDA is the gold standard in the world. And the FDA is constantly monitoring for safety, and doing the pause was the right thing. That builds confidence that people know that the FDA and the CDC are monitoring.
Not necessarily. I mean, it should build confidence.
It actually shows, the research showed after the pause, that confidence overall in the vaccines increased after the pause.
You see, that's not credible. And in fact, I'm holding the Wall Street Journal story that says it stoked hesitancy that threatens COVID-19 vaccination drive. That's just not credible. And it's not common sense, and it compounds the failures of the CDC and the FDA that marked all of 2020. I'm reading this amazing book, Doom, which is the politics of catastrophe. I actually couldn't put it down yesterday. Did an unprecedented thing. I actually paid for the Audible version of Doom with my own money. Niall Ferguson is one of the world's great historians, but I paid for the Audible version so that when I did 7 miles yesterday, as I'll tell you later, actually eight, because I also walked a mass. The fact of the matter is, this is one of the most compelling books, and its searing indictment of the CDC and the FDA is not something I'm happy about. It's an unfortunate collapse of the public health bureaucracy. But Jeff Zients, you got to be honest with people, or your credibility will be gone. And you got to get... Look, I love Tony Fauci. I defend him every day on this show. I'm glad to have him on the show. I offer to have him on every single day. Dr. Collins can come on every day. They stay cloistered in the green rooms of the Beltway, and they don't reach out to the populations they allegedly want to motivate. We've had 152 million vaccines. We need to get that up to 330 million. I mean, we really need to get vaccinated so those poor waiters and waitresses can go back to a normal life. They have a hard enough life without having to talk through the mask so that people can just go back to a normal life. Dr. Fauci said this on Meet the Press yesterday, cut 28.
Well, the fact that we have vaccines right now, Chuck, is really a game changer. I mean, if we get, which we will, to the goals that the president has established, namely, if we get 70% of the people vaccinated by the 4th of July, namely one single dose, and even more thereafter, you may see blips, but if we handle them well, it is unlikely that you'll see the kind of surge that we saw in the late fall and the early winter. That's the reason, Chuck, why we plead with people to get vaccinated, because the larger
proportion...
Stop for a
moment. They actually don't go to the right places to plead with people. They have exactly two hard-to-reach demographics, maybe three. I'm not sure how it's doing. The Latino population, Black population is suspicious, and the rural conservative population is suspicious. Well, you're not going to reach any of those with Meet the Press. And God knows I love Meet the Press and I love Chuck. But going to the highly influential Beltway-centric Sunday shows is not a way to communicate. Getting on to urban radio, talk shows, conservative radio, and going in harm's way, it's not like treating a smallpox patient in the medieval times. requires no courage. It just requires sitting down, taking hard questions, going on Tucker Carlson's show. That's where they should be going. Now, the vaccine makes sense. You should get the vaccine. Dr. Collins explained why if you go to my my podcast at iTunes, the interview with Hugh Hewitt. I suggest if you're a Christian, for example, Dr. Collins is probably the leading scientist in favor of theology with Orthodox theology that I know of. He mapped the genome. He saw the genome project to completion. He's a very persuasive figure. The administration has to go to persuaders, not back to the green rooms of the Beltway. Meanwhile, the EU leaders are disagreeing with the Biden administration decision over vaccine patent waivers. I'm in favor of vaccine patent waivers if people can show me it will get more people vaccinated in India. We shouldn't do it unless it's efficacious. If it is efficacious, we should do it. The key is to get the world vaccinated before a variant emerges that gets around our prior vaccination efforts. That's the critical issue. Chinese jabs dominate Latin American vaccination campaigns. That's not good. We got to push. You know, China is giving this so-so product out. I'm not even sure it works. And it's they're doing vaccine diplomacy even after they poisoned the world. Again, doom charts how they poisoned the world. Jerusalem is on fire. More than 100 people injured overnight in Jerusalem Day. Gaza and the West Bank see spreading violence. Meanwhile, the Islamist Ra'am party said they're going to support the Change Coalition to get rid of Netanyahu. We will see. Scotland election says the National Scottish Party is going to run Scotland's parliament, and they want another vote on separation. Boris isn't going to give them one. Meanwhile, Keir Starmer, you don't know that name mostly, he runs the left-wing party, the Labour Party in Great Britain, and Keir Starmer is in a crisis. He fired a bunch of people, then he rehired them. He does not look anything other than befuddled in his leadership re-election, and Boris Johnson is soaring. They won a by-election. They won local elections in a big way. Johnson is going to confirm the return of indoor socializing and dining on May 17th. Meanwhile, the Chinese rocket ship that we were worried about last week, well, it landed in the Indian Ocean. Nobody was injured. But we didn't know that. Terrible disaster in Kabul. 80 more Hazaras were attacked by a suicide bomber believed to have been Taliban. 80 died, mostly young girls, in a Time 3 suicide vest explosion, foretelling what happens when we pull out completely. And it's very, very sad that we are not holding on to Bagram and helping our Afghan allies. 6 dead in Colorado Springs shooting at a birthday party by a man who then killed himself. Doesn't get much attention because it's family violence, but it's 6 people dead. We have a U.S. pipeline shut down because the pipeline, it's the largest fuel pipeline that fuels the Gulf Coast to the New York Metro, was hit by ransomware. They're struggling to get it up and running, but it shuttered it yesterday, and it shows how vulnerable we are to this. The Financial Times said we declared a state of emergency to keep fuel flowing after cyber attack. Not sure how that does anything. Schools are generally starting to reopen. Only 3.3% of K-12 public schools remain closed. Most U.S. K-12 students are attending hybrid schools rather than closed schools. And traditional in-person everyday schools are now at 67%. One-third of American kids still being underserved. U.S. and Iran are negotiating the return to the accord. Very, very troubling story yesterday in the New York Times about these negotiations. My guess is Wendy Sherman is over there giving away the store. We have no idea. This one is something. Higher prices leave consumers feeling the pinch. Front page Wall Street Journal. Let me tell you this right now. Inflation is back. The Biden inflation is back. Christine Romans on CNN yesterday cut 17.
Call it the big I, inflation, the downside of a hot economy. The pandemic disrupted supply chains and consumer behavior. Working out kinks in distribution is causing shortages and price spikes from lumber to steel to rental cars. Add in the historic stimulus
stop.
To keep the coronavirus.
It's not kinks in distribution. It's flooding the monetary supply. I mean, it's just tripling the monetary supply in terms of deficit spending up to $7.5 trillion if Joe Biden gets his way, $1.9 trillion already in the pipeline on top of everything we did in 2020. It's too much money chasing too few goods. Joe Kernan, CNBC, cut number 23.
I guess I saw one of Jason's comments beforehand, Jason. Biden has laid out a great agenda, and Congress should act on it. And that's what I meant, Jason, by, I mean, I have seen some, and it's in the Wall Street Journal and pieces like that, that this is insanity, the type of entitlements we're talking about making permanent for the middle class, not even for people necessarily that are in need. And if we can't afford it, it's
Joe
not
Kernan
work
does
right.
not
it's
overstate gonna... things. Joe Kernan is right. It's insanity. It's the Biden inflation is here. More coming up. Stay tuned to the Hugh Hewitt Show. Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. Selena Zito is America's columnist. She sits there in Yinzerland in the middle of it all and opines and sometimes reminds us of things like Eric Holder's big plan to change the redistricting process, which failed. Good morning, Selena. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
Great. I love your new column. And I like you remind me that Pennsylvania was the site of the last decade's redistricting struggles, the liberal Supreme Court eventually overturning the will of the people. What do you expect is going to happen this time around?
Well, the expectation was that the Democrats were going to win the state House and state Senate in Pennsylvania, in my state, and that it was going to be smooth sailing for the Democrats to be able to draw all the lines. Eric Holder dumped millions of dollars in the state. So did Michael Bloomberg. People forget about that as well. Not only did they not win any new states, they lost seats they didn't expect to win. So what the Republicans have the upper hand in terms of controlling how the lines are drawn. Now, with a caveat, because of what the Supreme Court did, Tom Wolf does have a veto power on this, and they've set up a commission as well that has former Chancellor Mark Nordenberg of Pitt as part of it, as the lead on that. Having said that, the Republicans still have the upper hand in drawing it. They still have the most power in how these seats look, and I suspect. And Pennsylvania loses a seat as rumors become more predominant that Conor Lamb is going to run for the Senate as opposed for his House seat, the one he narrowly beat Sean Parnell for. I think his seat may be the one that goes.
Now, my expectation is that the Republicans in the state House and the state Senate will get, because they have majorities in both, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so they will get together and they will produce the traditional maps. They will be vetoed by Wolf, and then then I think they're in deadlock, and a federal court ends up getting it. If Pennsylvania Supreme Court tries to redraw them again, I expect the new Supreme Court will strike down that folly. The weakened court under Scalia could not with the Scalia death could not do so. But I think there are 5 votes to stop the Shanghaiing of the map process again, Selena. Do you think your Supreme Court knows they're on a very, very far out on a lamb that's a branch that is cracking?
Yeah, I think they knew they had the ability to get what they wanted with being one Supreme Court jurist down. They now know that that's not the case. And I think the Republicans in the Senate, the state Senate, and state House, will work in terms of keeping certain seats as, you know, Democrat seats. But there's opportunities in terms of what happens with that lost seat and how more Republican these seats become. I'm going to keep an eye on PA 17, which is the one that Conor Lamb currently holds, but also Matt Cartwright's seat, which is up in the Lackawanna, Luzerne County area. That seat will also, it doesn't have a choice but become more Republican.
You know, a specialist told me over the weekend, Oregon picked up a seat in the redistricting, and they have an independent commission that's likely to help the Republicans. I don't think the Republicans can do worse than what the Pennsylvania Supreme Court did to them in the last cycle. I don't think it's
Absolutely.
Possible to do worse.
No, there should be a book written about what the Pennsylvania Supreme Court did in 2018. That was there is no way they should have been able to do that, and yet they did.
Now, Selena, I want to ask you quickly. Have you been vaccinated?
Yeah.
Okay, so why do you hear when you report, why do people mostly not get vaccinated in your life, in your network? When people don't get vaccinated, what is the reason they cite most to you? Because I'm trying to persuade people to get vaccinated, but I got to identify the concerns first.
There's a good amount of people who just don't like needles, period. And they won't admit that, though. Because, you know, people can tell themselves that they're terrified of needles, but they're also afraid to tell someone else that they're afraid of needles. And people, I think, 30 and under, or 35 and under even, I think they believe that they're questionable about the need to get it.
You know, we got to work on that because they still are vectors. They're still transmission paths to every other person out there. You know, the needle doesn't hurt. It's not even a pinch.
It's not about the hurt. It has nothing to do about how it's hurting. It's the needle. It's the literal needle going into the arm. There is something people psychologically just cannot deal with the thought.
Don't even look. People, if you don't look, you won't know there's a needle.
Yeah, I don't have a problem.
I would love to find out if you've heard any of the conspiracy theories or the bad fake news that it changes your DNA and stuff like that. I would love to know what you hear in your network, Selena Zito.
Well, that's rare. The conspiracy, it's out there, but it's a very small
group. Very small group. I'd love to hear what you find out. Selena Zito, her new column, I just tweeted it out. Go read it. Stay tuned, America. Hour number two, straight ahead. Brought to you by ReliefFactor.com. $19.95 gets you started on ReliefFactor.com. I talk about it three times in my daily show. At the bottom of the first hour when I take it, and then in hours two and three when I remind you to take it, depending on when your commute begins, because ReliefFactor.com works. It's the only supplement I've taken in 30 years of broadcasting. I've declined every other opportunity to take a supplement, and I'll tell you why. Because ReliefFactor.com actually works. I carry in Curcumin Resveratrol Omega. Temporary relief for the relief of minor aches and pains. Temporary support for the relief of minor aches and pains. And you can't do better than that three-week starter pack, $19.95. Glory America, bonjour, hi Canada. It's Monday inside the Beltway, whatever the day is today, May the 10th, inside in the year of our Lord 2021. Jake Sherman of PunchbowlNews.com joins me. I have it in front of me. I read it every single morning. Punch Bowl News is absolutely free. All you have to do is go to punchbowlnews.com and ask for the morning letter. They may charge you if you can try and get more out of Jake than that. So, Jake, am I right? Punch Bowl News in the morning is free to everybody?
Free. Always will be free in the morning. That's our motto. We are charged for the afternoon and evening, and for some events, stuff like that, always free in the morning.
You know, in Josh Hawley's new book, The Tyranny of Big Tech, he calls that the addiction model. He wasn't talking about Punch Bowl News. He was talking about Facebook and Google. But you're practicing the addiction model, Jake. I approve, by the way.
Well, I just think that, we don't believe that advertising revenue is the sole you can't have one good revenue stream for a media company, for a journalistic outfit. You need to have multiple, and we want to sustain our in-depth analysis, reporting, and all that stuff, and that's the way we think we could do it best.
Now, are you ever going to go into the gossip business the way that Politico does? Not gossip, but fun stuff, Beltway, insider stuff like birthdays and Spotted and that kind of thing?
We don't intend to. No, that's not. We believe that there's a huge market, and we know there's a huge market for in-depth reporting and writing about the politics of governing, and that's where we're going to focus our energy.
All right, I have one suggestion for you, though. I think you ought to review restaurants. The reopening of the restaurant world presents a completely jumbled map for people who have not dined out for a year. In Old Town Alexandria, where they got Ada's and Barga's at the pier, new restaurants that were not here a year ago, and other restaurants have closed. You own that turf, Jake.
You know, that's actually interesting that you say that. You know, part of the way we view this business is like is governing and the adjacent kind of world. So I could see us getting into something of that nature. Maybe not restaurant reviews, but we do think that, like, mapping power, which is what we want to do, does include some adjacent things. I just don't think it'll be birthdays. I think Playbook, where I formerly worked, has the birthday world cornered.
Where the lobbying happens is what I would call it, because then you could work in a restaurant review, and you got a revenue stream then, too, if restaurants start buying it. So, Jake, let's talk about the Washington Post story this morning. Where's the plan Biden pressed on the global vaccine strategy? It's the first major negative story, and we've got Jake Tapper pushing back at Jeff Zients about the J&J vaccine, which was a fiasco, despite what Zients says. It looks to me like the honeymoon is over.
Yeah, well, first of all, I think there's been, I take a different view than you. I think there has been negative or critical coverage of Biden so far. We've been critical of him, and we think he's underestimated or really never understood Republicans in their current context. And we've written about that. But yeah, I mean, listen, he has a lot under control, right? I mean, the Trump administration got the vaccine started. Biden did a good job at logistics and getting it out. And I think people are going to ask for what's next. And by the way, it's not just the vaccine, Hugh. It's how will you get infrastructure passed? What is it going to look like? Are you going to get your American Families Plan passed? He's put out a massively ambitious agenda, and I think it's fair to judge him on how that's going.
Well, that's what the Post does. It says his component for the international rollout is a disaster. By the way, I've got this new book, Niall Ferguson's book, Doom. Have you heard of this, The Politics of Catastrophe? It's the eminent historian's look at the pandemic so far. Have you heard of this, Jake?
I've heard of him. I didn't know he had a new book out.
I can't put it down. I've read it nonstop Saturday and Sunday, and I even bought the Audible version so I could listen to it when I was walking and trundling, because it's that good. And boy, does he blast the CDC and the FDA, and he blasts Trump and he blasts everybody. But the CDC and the FDA come in for it, and I think it's an interesting counterpoise to what is happening inside the White House. It was commented to me, Jake, that this White House is leak-proof. Do you agree with that?
No, I don't. I don't. I actually find it just as easy to deal with this White House as to deal with the last one. But I'm also not looking for, like, if Ron Klain is getting into a spitting match with, you know, aide X. I'm just not terribly interested in that unless it impacts policy. I will say it's much easier to get information, like factual information, out of the White House about what they're trying to do, what they're doing, how they plan to do it, and things like that. So I actually find it I find the access in this White House much easier for me. And I had very good relationships in the last White House as well. But I just find if I need information that I'm able to get it out of this White House quite easily.
Now, do you know, there is a huge story in the New York Times this morning. U.S. and Iran want to restore the nuclear deal. They disagree on what that means. And they do not tell us who is negotiating. I'm deeply alarmed that it's Wendy Sherman, who brought back the 1994 nuclear, quote, deal with Korea, and then brought back the first JCPOA with John Kerry superintending at the end. They say 5 weeks of meetings in Vienna. Who is it? Who's doing the deal?
That's a really good point. I actually don't know the answer to that, and I thought the detail of that story was quite interesting. It said that the Americans are passing notes to Iran through European counterparts, which I thought was interesting imagery. I don't know. I would assume Wendy Sherman is involved, but I actually don't know the answer to that. It's a very good question.
Now, Wendy Sherman, by the way, is a very nice person, and I've met her, and she's a lovely person. Everyone who works with her says she's a lovely person. I just think she's an appeasement-oriented individual, and I don't know who's running this deal, and Jake Sherman's here, and Tony Blinken is here, so I have to think it's her, and if it's her...
Jake Sullivan, just to be
Jake
clear.
Jake Sullivan.
Jake Sherman is
Well, you know, you could be the National Security Advisor someday. You never know. Let's go to the infrastructure bill. You know the Wall Street Journal lead story today is on inflation, and I've played all the clips of mentioning inflation and the terrible jobs report. There is a stagflation peril out there. The Biden inflation is beginning to bite, Jake. Does the White House worry that that's going to overtake their spending plans?
Deeply concerned. I'd say they're deeply but quietly concerned about it. But, you know, I think the real big thing to watch you in the next couple weeks here is there's two different dynamics playing out. There is Nancy Pelosi, who understandably, according to her politics, wants to go quickly and pass infrastructure. Then there's Joe Biden and Chuck Schumer, who are more eager to listen to Shelley Moore Capito. I don't know if you saw, but we put in our newsletter this morning, Mitch McConnell was on Kentucky
PBS
television. Yep, and said he is interested in a bill between $600 and $800 billion, which is more than he said before. And he said 600 last time, so now he thinks between 600 and 800. 800 would put them right at the place, about $100 billion difference between their plan, the Republican plan, and the Democrats' hard infrastructure plan, which sits at about $936 billion. So you actually don't have a ton of difference there between McConnell and where the Shelley Moore Capito, McConnell, and where the Democrats are. I just think that they're going to come under tremendous pressure, this White House, to get moving and to get moving quickly. And I think the House Democrats are going to be leading that charge.
Well, it will be interesting to me to see, because the inflation worry of throwing another $2.5 trillion onto the pyre is significant. Let me close with Virginia, Jake. I had a very disappointing Saturday. The Fetching Mrs. Hewitt and I got up early, drove down forever to get to our polling place, and then were turned away because we weren't on the list and there were no provisionals. It turns out only 30,000 ballots were turned in. They were expecting 50,000. I think the Virginia Republican Party has screwed up again. We know who the attorney general nominee is, and that turns out to be the moderate. What do we infer from that, if anything? What do you hear about the Virginia process, if anything?
Oh, I don't think we can infer much from that. Although I will say they've picked a fight with the wrong guy and not having you on the list. I'd say that. But I don't think we could take much of it. I think that I just think that it's one election is one election. And I think that's what we should take from it.
Well, are you taking any, like Andrew Sullivan wrote what I believe, that the labor rout in the United Kingdom last week portends very bad things for the Democrats, that Donald Trump's unpopularity with one demographic may have concealed the Democrats' weakness as a result of their lurch left, and that is the suburban women. But that now that he's not on the ticket, the Democrats are going to get pasted badly like labor did in the UK. Your theory on my theory.
I think that's fine. I think that's fair enough. I don't think we know enough about the suburbs yet. I think that I think we've seen obviously a steady increase of Democratic registration and Democratic appearance in the results in the suburbs. I just don't know. I've had Republicans say to me two different things. We're fine in the suburbs, and then one prominent Republican said we'll never be back a pace in the suburbs until Donald Trump is out of the picture. I don't know which one is right. I think the 2022 election, Hugh, is no more complicated than Republicans should win 20 something seats based on history. And there's a couple outliers in which the minority party opposite from the president did not win. And Republicans need 5 seats and they're favored in redistricting. Those data points tell me a lot of what I need to know.
I agree. The Republicans are going to have the House, and it's a battle for the Senate. We'll see how unpopular Biden is by then. Jake Sherman, PunchbowlNews.com. Get it every morning for free. Stay tuned, America. Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. After the break, I want to find out why some of you have not gotten vaccinated and persuade you to go out and get vaccinated, because you really need to. Sungmin Kim is with The Washington Post, where she covers the Biden White House and The Hill. Good morning, Sungmin. How are you?
Good morning. Thanks for having me, Hugh.
The biggest story of the day is inflation. The Wall Street Journal lead story, higher prices leave consumers feeling the pinch. The second biggest story of the day in the paper we both work for, where is the plan? Biden pressed on global vaccine strategy. And the biggest story of Friday was the terrible miss in the job numbers. Is Team Biden beginning to feel the heat?
I think certainly these are all developments that they are watching really closely. And I think the really interesting factor of those three that you mentioned is going to be, all of them are interesting. But one thing that we're watching closely is just the rising concern about inflation and how that affects their very ambitious, massive $4 trillion jobs and spending agenda that they're trying to push through Congress right now. And if that makes Democrats nervous, my colleagues at The Washington Post had some reporting last week on how the White House is grappling with the situation right now. And obviously you saw Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen raise some of those concerns and then walk them back. But at the White House, in particular, Brian Deese, the chief economics person, is really watching just the words of how the White House communicates about this situation, just to be kind of careful with how they are messaging it. But certainly, if you hear folks like Joe Manchin and other influential Democratic senators start to get worried about kind of the impact, that's really going to potentially affect the debate over over his infrastructure plan on Capitol Hill.
Now, Sung Min, words about inflation don't matter. That's like if the White House came out against traffic accidents, that would be good, but it would have no impact on traffic accidents because inflation is driven by the money supply. Warren Buffett last week said the economy is experiencing a substantial run-up, quote, we're raising prices, people are raising prices to us, and it's being accepted. It's an economy that's really red hot, and we weren't expecting it. So the White House language and messaging doesn't really affect consumer prices, which jumped 2.6% in the year ending March, which is the biggest 12-month increase since August of 2018. Are they going to trim back? The key is they can only respond to inflation. They can't impact it. Are they cutting back their proposals?
They are certainly not cutting back their proposals. I mean, this is something that the White House has been asked, and I'm sure will be asked again in the coming days. But this their $4 trillion plan is their $4 trillion plan, and I don't see them scaling back that proposal in any way, aside from potentially breaking it up into pieces in order for some of the pieces to get Republican support. I don't see them scaling back the overall price tag unless they see that they're not able to get Democratic supporters for their plan.
So they really don't care about inflation. I'm wondering if House Democrats have told you, though, especially those, you know, they've got the triple whammy. I was talking to Jake Sherman earlier. They got the triple whammy of retirements, redistricting, and the first off-year election. And so they're going to lose the majority. And Democrats in marginal seats do not want to lose their jobs or they would retire. If we have inflation of 3 or 4%, much less higher, they're going to get wiped out, Sung Min. Doesn't Joe Biden care about those people?
It's actually not a specific concern that the swing district Democrats have raised. And obviously, that could change this week when Congress returns. They get asked by reporters or they become more vocal on the jobs plan as it's being shaped. But if you look at the concerns that are coming from these swing district Democrats, it actually has to do with the tax side of things. So, for example, you have farm state Democrats concerned about particular provisions. You have the SALT deductions that are hitting, the SALT deduction Northeastern Democrats want to propose. In terms of it being too much spending and the impact on inflation, we haven't heard that much yet. But once those swing district Democrats start getting loud about the issue, if that's what happens, then you'll hear Nancy Pelosi get loud. And perhaps that will be something that catches the White House's attention. And then perhaps it could impact the debate.
Republicans have figured out that the stepped up basis elimination is a killer app. They are going to kill Democrats with a second death tax, or some people call it a success tax. Some people call it the working wealthy tax, whatever it is. Stepped up basis, if it's eliminated and only given a deduction, is going to crush a lot of people that go back and forth, swing state voters. Have you heard anything about Democrat pushback on that? I know about the SALT debate, state and local income tax deductibility. When the Republicans removed it, they got killed in big blue states. But if they remove stepped up basis, Democrats are going to get killed in swing state blue states.
That's not something that we have heard again so far. The interesting part is when these Northeastern Democrats started speaking out about the SALT deduction in particular, Nancy Pelosi actually kind of told her members to be a little bit more, a little bit quiet and reserve their judgment about their package and be a little bit or be quieter about their concerns. Don't be so quick to come out against the package. So that could be part of why we haven't heard a lot of concerns from swing state Democrats about this overall package, but certainly that can change in the coming weeks.
Sung Min, when does the Pelosi power begin to erode? She's retiring. She's getting out. She's going to get out, and everybody knows it, and everybody understands. She's been a powerful speaker and ruthless to some extent, which, by the way, is a good quality in a leader. I like it in McConnell. But she's leaving, and when someone leaves a job, their ability to hold a caucus together begins to fragment. Has that shown up yet?
Not yet. I mean, she's been able to keep her caucus together for someone who has almost the narrowest of House majorities She's been able to keep the caucus together on the big legislation that has that the House Democrats have passed, whether it's just through the House or through through the Senate as well, and then to Biden's desk to be signed into law, such as the COVID relief package. But there are going to be thornier issues that come up. For example, again, going back to the jobs plan, with some of the concerns that are popping up among some quarters about how the package is paid for or what is not in the package. So that'll be her real test, and how much influence, or if her power is declined at all by the fact that she, it looks like she may be a lame duck speaker, will be evident in those coming votes. But I think there is no one better on Capitol Hill who can count votes, who's better at counting votes than Nancy Pelosi. And it's hard to see that power eroding very visibly, at least right away.
You know, this is the part of the movie where people are hanging around the lifeboats. They haven't lowered the lifeboats yet, but they've they're just hanging around the lifeboats because we bumped into something and they've watched the Titanic too many times. That's where we are. Let's turn to the vaccine rollout. This Washington Post story by Dan Diamond and Tyler Pager, the Where's the Plan? Biden pressed on global vaccine strategy, is the first all-out negative blast at their COVID response that I've seen. It's a warning. It's the first robin in spring. It's the meteor shower in the sky in medieval times. But it's Halley's Comet. What do you make of it, Sungmin?
Well, it's great reporting from my colleagues, and it is something that they will have to address in the coming weeks, because you see for the most part that the vaccine rollout has been successful in the United States. Now we're getting to the point where a lot of the people who are more reticent to get the vaccine where the government is trying to reach the people who are more reticent to get the vaccine. But at the same time, the U.S. is a leader in the world, and the United States has a major role to play in ensuring that the rest of the world gets vaccinated. So it is going to be a major test for the administration in the coming weeks, and certainly that they are very aware that that is a major challenge.
So, Sungmin, how are they trying to reach the non-vaccinated? I think this is actually a crucial issue, and I have made the comment. I love Tony Fauci. He's been a guest on this show twice. I defend him against his conservative critics, but he was on Meet the Press again yesterday, and I would guess if you gathered up the number of times he's been in a Sunday green room, it would be in all the major shows, it would be in excess of 100. That's the same audience. It's the same, and they're all vaccinated. What are they doing about urban audiences? What are they doing about rural Republicans? How are they trying to get to people who have not been vaccinated?
So one thing that they've been trying to focus on is access and making sure that people can find readily available locations near them to get vaccinated. So the White House has been touting being able to text your location to a number and all these vaccine locations where you can get vaccinated popping up on your phone to make it easier. In terms of outreach to communities, they are also looking at, they've talked for weeks about, not necessarily getting, celebrities or major politicians or government officials like Dr. Fauci to reach out to people, but their local leaders, the local doctors, the local clergy. Jen Psaki was on CNN the other day talking about kind of liking it to a campaign at this point in terms of their vaccine strategy. It's easy to get out the likely voters. It's easy to get out people who are eager to get vaccinated once the availability is there. But now they're at the phase where they are, trying to reach the lower propensity voters. So so they're looking at it like a campaign, going door to door, trying to track down people who aren't willing to get vaccinated or just, have a litany of reasons such as I feel healthy or I feel fine. I don't think I'll get the coronavirus, and really trying to drill in that way. But certainly it's a challenge, and we'll see how, if we'll ever get to that 75% to 80% mark that's been talked about for potential herd immunity. That it is a high goal considering where we are right now, but it'll certainly be a challenge, again, like so many other things, for the Biden White House.
Sungmin, I hear him talking about it. I just don't see it. And here's the key question. If you really wanted to go after the hardcore conservative non-vaccinated, you would go on Tucker Carlson's show every night. And I mean, back in the days of the 1918 virus, doctors did incredibly courageous things. They went into the middle of the camps where the influenza was sweeping through and killing people. A lot of doctors died. We can't even get the Biden people to go on Fox News. That's not really courage to get, you know, into an argument with Tucker Carlson. When are they going to engage center-right media?
Well, I think the problem with Tucker Carlson, as you in terms of one example that you used, is that he has been spreading a lot of, you know, misinformation and doubt about the vaccine themselves. So I would not be surprised, you know, I would not be surprised if Biden officials, their public health officials, would be eager to go. I mean, I'm sure they would be eager to go on, you know, Fox or Tucker to try to dispute the views that, you know, some of those hosts are spreading. I don't, you know, it's a booking thing that I don't have much visibility.
Sungmin, I think if you report that, you'll find that's not true, but we'll see. I hope you report that because I can't get these guys. They ought to be living on this show. They ought to be living on every conservative talk show, and they show up once every 6 months. And that's because they don't value it. They value green rooms in D.C., and it's a terrible failure of their public communication strategy. Sungmin Kim, follow her on Twitter. Read everything she writes in the Washington Post. Keep coming back. I want to remind you that our sponsor is andrewandtodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to andrewandtodd.com or call them at 888-1172. Glory America, bonjour, hi Canada. Q Hewitt inside the Beltway on this Monday morning, joined by Peter Baker, one of the chief White House correspondents for the New York Times covering the Biden administration. Good morning, Peter. Good Monday to you.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
I'm great. I want to ask you about the vaccination drive, which is faltering. We're at 152 million people vaccinated. Dr. Fauci is worried we won't get to 70%. And there is a couple of conflicting messages here. The Wall Street Journal has a story this morning by Julie Wernow. J&J vaccine pause stoked hesitancy that threatens COVID-19 vaccination drive. Last week on this show, Dr. Collins said that's not true. Jeff Stein said that's not true yesterday. What do you think? I think it is true. In fact, common sense tells me it has to be true.
Well, you know, obviously there's a lot of hesitancy out there for a lot of different reasons. What's really interesting is that there are different buckets of people who are resisting, right? There are the folks who are, you know, Trump supporters who don't like it. There are, you know, minority groups who feel suspicious of the government. There are younger people who feel like maybe they don't need it. There are people who don't trust the vaccine because they feel like it didn't get tested long enough. So there's lots of different, I think, reasons. And I think the J&J pause probably can, you know, encourage some people who are already skeptical for whatever reason to say, oh, wait a second, see what happens there. And of course, the J&J vaccine seems to be perfectly safe. The number of blood clots out of the number of shots delivered was so minuscule that, you know, that the odds are, of course, way in the favor of anybody taking it. But, you know, it's a moment in our society when people are uncertain about the institutions around them, and that's what the Biden administration and others are trying to do, is reassure Americans that this vaccine, which, by the way, of course, was developed under the Trump administration, it's not a political thing. It's something that's working, and people ought to feel comfortable about it.
Now, I was taking a poll of some of my listeners who have not been vaccinated. I asked them why. One, I haven't been sick in 72 years. Two, Dennis Prager told me not to do it. Three, I've already had COVID. Four, J&J uses aborted fetuses. Five, it's still an experimental drug. Six, no knowledge of the long-term effects. These are all interesting questions. I don't think I've answered them all for myself. I got vaccinated immediately. I urge everyone to get vaccinated. Dr. Francis Collins was on last week. But the administration sends out Jeff Zients to State of the Union and Tony Fauci to meet the press, and they're there every week. It's the same 4 million people, Peter. What are they doing to reach the unreached groups or to persuade people?
Well, I think that we've gotten past the point where, you know, celebrity or scientific validators are enough, right? What I've heard from people who are smart about this thing is you need to get into the communities. You need to get people that individuals trust, your community leaders, your family members, your doctors, your ministers or rabbis, you know, your people who you see every day in your community that whose judgment you respect. But it's really interesting. I've seen this in my own family and my own friends too, right? A friend came up to me and said, well, I don't trust these vaccines. Look at this article, and shows me an article. And the articles, and I looked at the URL, and the article came from www.scandal.com or something like that, right? And I'm like, okay, well, think about the source of information you're talking about here. You've got to take some responsibility for getting responsible information from people who know what they're talking about, not just believing any and everything that we see out there on the internet, where, as you say, there are lots of scandal stories that may have no bearing on reality.
Yeah, I've got this brand new book by Niall Ferguson, which I'm holding up for the cameras for people watching on YouTube, Doom, The Politics of Catastrophe. It's a very significant book. And it talks about the failure of the CDC and the FDA. I think there is a failure of comm strategy, which goes back to the very beginning of the Trump administration by the CDC and the FDA. They only go where it's comfortable. They go on shows where I'm a comfortable person. They know I'm pro-vaccine. They will not engage the Tucker Carlsons, the Dennis Pragers, the Seb Gorkas. They just won't engage. Now, in the last pandemic in 1918, Peter, doctors went into the middle of disease-ridden community with no idea whether they would survive. Malaria research and yellow fever research was advanced by doctors who went to Cuba and self-injected. Why won't the administration go on maybe a hostile television or radio show in order to spread the word? Because it's actually not just in the community that this needs to be done. They need to confront and persuade, not argue with, but persuade doubters with high profiles.
Yeah, no, I think it's a good point, and I think you're right that people need to be willing to engage people where they live, not just where you're comfortable. I think that's a fair point. Now, it may be that you have to pick the right people to do it, right? Are the FDA or the CDC people the right messengers to go on some of these shows where there's such high skepticism, or can they find people who have more respect in those communities? That's a good question. I don't know. You know, we have yet to see, for instance, I'm still not sure why President Trump hasn't done a PSA. Would that help? I don't know. I mean, the truth is, I do think it's going to be more about your individual community leaders at this point more than you know, high-profile validators. But you need to do everything. And I was thinking the other day, I think they're trying to get these, you know, like mobile vaccine units into communities, actually go to the people if they're not going to come to the clinics, they're not going to come to the Walgreens and the CVSs. Go to them and see if you can't get them to sign up. I think they're going to probably get there. But
that makes sense for some underserved communities, and they're focusing on that. But I do, in Niall's book, he talks about network flow of information, and you've got to break bad information flow. And so the best presenter is Dr. Collins, because it's of his high reputation in the evangelical community, which is extraordinary. He mapped the genome. And he defends the existence of God, and he's very, very persuasive. He's the best messenger, and they don't roll him out. Dr. Fauci, by the way, is, I think, persuasive. They're very loud critics of Dr. Fauci. I don't think they're very numerous critics of Dr. Fauci in terms of percentage. Maybe 5% of the people out there don't like Dr. Fauci. I love the guy. You know, he's been wrong, but we're all wrong about stuff. I don't think they're trying. And then when I see Jeff Zients, did you see Jeff on State of the Union yesterday?
I didn't. No, I need to go back and watch it.
Well, let's play that clip for Peter of cut number 31.
No, not at all. I mean, the FDA is the gold standard in the world, and the FDA is constantly monitoring for safety, and doing the pause was the right thing. That builds confidence that people know that the FDA and the CDC are monitoring.
Not necessarily. I mean, it should build confidence.
It actually shows, the research showed after the pause, that confidence overall in the vaccines increased after
that,
the pause.
That's non-responsive, and it's not credible, Peter. And I worry about another credibility breakdown as the last administration suffered from, and Deborah Birx suffered from, and Tony Fauci suffered from. Zients has stayed out of that thus far. Do you have that worry? Do they have that worry inside the White House that they're messaging obviously not true things?
Well, I mean, you're right that credibility is such a huge issue right now, and this administration has to be careful not to fall into that trap, because the people are so skeptical of government, and people are so skeptical of each other, people are so skeptical of institutions right now, and they shouldn't do anything right that contributes to that, no question about it. I didn't see that particular segment. You played it. It's interesting. Jeff Zients obviously has a lot of experience from the Obama administration running big organizational things. He's not a medical expert. But they need to find a way to expand credibility in the places where there's a lot of doubt, and that's a hard thing. And it's right.
You got to go where there's doubt, and you got to think. I tell people I have 30 radio shows a week because the average time spent listening is 32 minutes. I'm on 15 hours a week. That means there are 30 different audiences, and I've covered with administration people five of them. Let me go to a story in the paper today by Steve Erlanger and David Sanger, your colleagues. The U.S. and Iran want to restore the nuclear deal. They disagree deeply on what that means. Very interesting piece. They do not, however, tell us who is negotiating on behalf of the United States in Vienna. I'm afraid it's Wendy Sherman. Who is it?
Well, I'm not covering it right now, so I'm not there. I wish I were there to find out. But that's a good question. I don't know the answer to that right now.
You see, to me, it can't be Blinken or Jake Sullivan, right? They're in town. No. And if these meetings have been going on for 5 weeks, it's got to be somebody else. And Wendy Sherman is responsible for the 1994 North Korea, quote, deal and the first JCPOA. I think this is somebody's got to know. They're in hotel rooms in Vienna. It's not a state secret, right?
Well, I assume. I don't know the, I mean, I'm not, again, I haven't covered that story, so I but you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to see if I get a ticket and go and find out, because I would love to be there.
Yeah, I just would love to know. If it's Wendy Sherman, I'm giving up hope.
Yeah.
Let me ask you about final story. Wall Street Journal. Inflation worries everybody. It's being Warren Buffett down to the person shopping in the Costco. How much does it worry the White House upsetting their spending plans? Because if they pour another $2.5 trillion to $4 trillion on this fire, it will become an inferno.
Well, they're certainly acting like they're not worried about it, and and they're certainly dismissive of the arguments that they've heard from people like you mentioned and Larry Summers and others who have expressed concern about supercharging the economy. I think there's one thing, we haven't seen super inflation basically in so long that we've forgotten what it looks like, and we think that we've defeated it. I'm not an economist, but it certainly, you know, begs question of like, just because we haven't seen it in the last 30 years doesn't mean that it's not going to come roaring back if we aren't careful. So I, again, not an economist, don't want to presume to say, but I think it's a big worry.
It should be. It's going to kill them at the polls, if nothing else. Marginal Democratic seats will be wiped away with the Biden inflation. Peter Baker, follow him on Twitter at Peter Baker NYT. Follow me to the next segment, America. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Josh Kroshauer is a columnist with National Journal, great reporter. Follow him on Twitter at Hotline Josh, even as you follow me at Hugh Hewitt. Josh, I've taken a lot of calls this morning asking my audience why they haven't been vaccinated, doing the job that the government isn't doing, which is reaching out to people who are skeptical. What do you make of the, I saw Dr. Fauci on yesterday, meet the press for his, 2000th time. I saw Zients on with Jake Tapper. The green room strategy is not reaching America. What do they need to do differently to reach the 40% of America that's not vaccinated yet?
Well, look, from the CDC's perspective, I think the simple message is should have been from the get-go, without nuance, get vaccinated, hug your grandkids, go out, live a normal life. Unfortunately, there's been so much hedging, so much bureaucratic language. The degree of caution from the public health leadership has, I think, almost disincentivized some people on the fence from getting the vaccine right away, at least. And I still, to this day, you're still not getting clear messaging saying you're vaccinated fully, you can go out, you can live normal lives, you don't have to worry about anything. That's not been the messaging from the CDC. And I think that a more optimistic, forward-looking message without all the hedging and sort of fine print that seems to be emphasized in their arguments, it would go a long way in alleviating a lot of the, there's some people that are going to be anti-vax no matter what. I think those people are going to be lost forever and no matter what government says. But I think if you look at the data, there is sort of a group in the middle of the vaccine skeptics. And I think the public governmental messaging has not been effective in reaching out to those folks.
That is the conclusion, by the way, of Niall Ferguson in his new book, Doom. I don't know if you've read this book yet, and it's really the best review of the pandemic response and the disaster scholarship and the network scholarship that go understanding why the vaccine is late arriving and why the virus spread. But I am curious about whether you have any idea, do they ever sit down and talk about messaging? Because it's so bad. It was bad under Trump. It's bad under Biden. I sell things for a living. You've got to repeat a message 7 times for people to buy something or even be persuaded or get their attention. There isn't one message. It hasn't been repeated 7 times. And they don't even try to get onto Fox, as far as they can tell, where apparently a lot of the never-vaxxers live, or into the African-American community where there's a lot of skepticism. They just stay in D.C.'s green rooms.
Yeah, so I think part of the problem is what you allude to, Hugh, which is that you can be an expert in science and health, but not be an expert in communication and public relations and getting a message out there. And that, you see that often in the government, that the language government officials use isn't the best designed to persuade or to get Americans to be convinced of that position. So I think sometimes you can get almost so into the science and forget the need to communicate effectively. And you see that a lot in government, and I think you're seeing that very much on the health side and from the CDC. I also think there is a genuine, like, it's weird that you do have on among the very progressive, cautious folks, like, there is a hesitance to get out and actually get, you know, start living a normal life. There was a great story in The Atlantic by Emma Green, kind of reflecting this constituency. And I think that's also a challenge because, you know, the Biden administration, it's been Jake Tapper on CNN was asking some good questions of one of Biden's top health officials about why Biden, you know, wears masks when he's vaccinated and with other fully vaccinated people. I mean, some of the modeling that the White House has done, I think, has also sent some mixed messages. And I think it's reflective of the base. So we're a lot of very progressive, public health conscious, cautious Americans are, even after they've been fully vaccinated.
What's really crazy, I just had a caller tell me Seb Gorka tells people not to get vaccinated. So I asked Seb, I sent him a note. He said, nope, garbage. You should know better, Hugh. And I, you know, I didn't believe it, but someone said Seb Gorka doesn't believe in vaccination. There's so much crap out there. We've got to get the FDA and the CDC and Dr. Collins onto conservative center-right media. They got to go sit down with Tucker and answer his arguments if he's got – I don't even know if I don't watch Tucker either.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, on the right, Tucker Carlson, I've been watching the show a little bit the last couple of weeks, and he has been notably skeptical about the vaccines and about the efficacy of the vaccine. So, I mean, I think that's a problem. I mean, he has
Collins showed up? Has anyone from the administration shown up? Because there used to be doctors who would heroically go to Cuba to fight malaria. Can't our CDC doctors at least show up in a green room and answer his questions?
I'm not sure if he's invited. I hope he has, but I don't like to see that on his show. But he's the most watched cable news show,
yes,
three of the networks, and he's been leading and advancing, I would at least say, skepticism towards the vaccine, if not outright. He's invited some pretty, you know, this guy Alex Berenson, who I think is a little bit off the deep end.
Well, I know Alex is a friend of mine. I had him on, and I argued with him. But, I also have on Fauci and Collins.
Right. So I think there's a issue on the right, especially with Tucker's show, where he's advancing a lot of the skepticism and not as much all the amazing efficacy with these two vaccines, especially.
They need to go everywhere. They cannot stay in the green rooms where they're comfortable with people who slap them on the back. I mean, that's last word to you, Josh. They can't stay in the Beltway. They got to move beyond that.
Yeah, well, so I will say, like, Fauci was on Fox quite a bit, I know, especially during the Trump administration. I've been impressed with two doctors or medical experts. Dr. Ashish Jha has been making the rounds on the cable news shows. I think he's excellent and has been offering a measured, if not optimistic, view of the future out of this pandemic. And, on CBS, Trump's former FDA chief, Gottlieb.
Gottlieb, well put. We're out of time, Josh. Gottlieb is very good. Thank you all. I'll be back tomorrow.